This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. It's Greg Watson here. Lovely to have your company on the show where we try to talk a little bit about what's happening in real estate regionally, locally, I guess nationally, internationally, whatever we have time for in this sort of 25-minute format. Generally, we sort of analyse the news. I might throw in a couple of comments here or there and just see how we go. But it's a good roundup of some of the things that have been happening, so I do hope you enjoy the show. There's a good article on News Hub, 7th of June 2024. It says, Housing Market Analysis. Lending rules loosen, investors win big in budget 2024. So this is a bit of a roundup by Kimberly Gomez, from Radio New Zealand. And it's really an analysis by her. So I'm just going to read a little bit of this out, and it just tells us a bit of what's going on. So she says there are a lot more options for investors with a bunch of rule changes and budget allocations, but the direction of interest rates still remains uncertain. So here's what moved in real estate this week. Starting off, let's have a look at what the budget brought. Restoring interest deductibility for residential rental property takes up $729 million of the budget. The cost of tax breaks for landlords over 4 years will be $2.9 billion. Now, this is the interest deductibility that always was in place but got brought in under the previous government. And this was something where many landlords felt that this was a very difficult thing for them and affected their ability to be able to even keep hold of their properties. Being a landlord is a business, and unlike every other business in the country, the rule was brought in to tax the income before expenses rather than taxing any profitability. So they say it's tax breaks, but actually it's a little unusual in the first place. But this will have an effect on the market. The will be a little bit easier for landlords to be closer to cost neutral or in profit. So last week, the government also scrapped the first home grant scheme, and that's expected to save over $245 million in the next 4 years. And I know I spoke about this on last week's show, but basically this was the grant where first-time buyers could get up to $10,000. I mentioned my opinion, which is that it makes little difference in the big scheme of things as to whether somebody can afford a home or not. So that has been scrapped. Another $140 million has been set aside for new funding for 1,500 new social housing places from July 2025 to be provided through community housing providers rather than Kāinga Ora. This, for me, is really great news. I'd rather, instead of $140 million, it was 10 times larger. But this is really the area in which we need to provide more housing. And the reason for that is because more housing at that lower level, at the social level, then takes some of this demand and the difference between supply and demand out of the market. Even though house prices haven't been going up, supply and demand is still largely out of whack. So in other words, there's not enough houses. Certain handbrakes that the government has put on, or this government or the previous one, around the ability to lend, the ability to service loans, those sorts of things, has meant that a lot of first home buyers have been removed from their ability to buy, and likewise investors have been largely removed from the market. The effect of that is that house prices haven't been rising. However, rental properties prices have been going up significantly. Now, the reason for that, again, is supply and demand. And that's where the changes have been quite large in some areas, up to 10% in a year, which on, for example, on a $500 a week rent would be $50 extra. And this is just the way the market's been moving up. Because although they can artificially slow down the sales market and stop those prices from going up, very difficult to do the same with renting. In other news that was in that budget, by the way, the Ministry of Housing significantly exceeded its savings goal of $109 million and actually achieved $391 million. That was good. The warmer Kiwi Homes scheme is also being scaled back with the end of subsidies for hot water heating and outreach program for hard-to-reach households. And $45 million is being spent on adjusting the Brightline test. From 1st of July, cut-off for tax breaks when selling a second home will drop from 10 years to 2. So again, this was a change that was brought in originally in the old days, I guess you could say, or when the Brightline test was originally brought in. It was brought in at 2 years. And the reason for that was to stop rampant property speculation, where on a rising market, people would buy and sell multiple properties every year, putting a bit of paint on them, selling them, getting a lump sum each time, and that was something that they wanted to stop. 2 years is plenty to stop that activity. But what happened previously under the former governments was that that got moved out to 5 years and then 10 years, and that became effectively a proxy capital gain. So you'd have to pay, if you bought an investment property and sold it within 10 years, you'd have to pay any tax on the profit that you make from that sale. So they've reduced that back to 2 years. That makes it a bit more appealing for investors, particularly because many investors actually only own one or two properties. So they're really just, sorry to generalise, mums and dads or people that have got a certain way through life and are just wanting to invest some money. So effectively, I believe, punishing them if they had to sell earlier because of some unforeseen circumstances in their life was hard. Of course, you can argue that one both ways. Now, debt to income and loan to value ratios is something else that's come in. So the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has activated debt to income rules and is loosening the loan to value ratios as further means of managing the property sector. So if that sentence meant nothing to you, we'll try to explain that a little bit. Debt to income is how much debt you're allowed to carry compared to how much income you make, and that affects how much you can lend on a house, effectively the upper limit of what you can lend. The LVR, the loan to value ratios, is how much of a deposit you need in order to buy a house, or how often the banks can break those rules legally to lend. So from the 1st of July, banks will be limited to no more than 20% of new lending to owner-occupiers with a debt-to-income ratio of more than 6, and no more than 20% of new investor lending over a debt-to-income ratio of 7. So 4 out of every 5 loans, in other words, has to be below that standard. And then the banks can look at extenuating circumstances, for example, where there might be a higher deposit or something like that, and decide to qualify that person for one of those 20%. So that means that most owner-occupiers with an income of $100,000 would be able to borrow $600,000 and investors could borrow $700,000. So this may affect people in higher-priced markets or who are on lower wages with the upper end of what they can buy. The loan-to-value ratios restrict the amount of low deposit lending by banks, and the changes mean the banks can lend 20% of all of their lending to owner-occupiers with deposits less than 20%, and that has been 15%. So 5% can be done to property investors with equity or deposits less than 30% compared to 35% at present. So what does that mean? It means that more people, relatively, will be able to lend that can't currently. 5% more, 5% more, or 5 percentage points more for owner-occupiers and 5 percentage points more for investors. So that's making that a little easier, but how much they can borrow is now the thing that's going to possibly have a slowdown effect on the market. So in one way, they're taking the foot off the brake, but unfortunately they've left the handbrake on. So it's really a bit of a balance, that one. So what about low interest rate expectations and house price growth? There's a growing belief among households that interest rates will soon fall, but the country remains split on whether the time is right to buy a house. ASB's Housing Confidence Survey for 3 months to April shows that for the first time in 3 years, more New Zealanders expect interest rates to go down rather than up. And while we're at the peak of the interest rate cycle, there is still uncertainty about when the Reserve Bank will begin lowering the official cash rate, which means affordability constraints are likely to remain. And that's according to Kim Mundy, the ASB senior economist. She said households' expectations of lower interest rates was premature in ASB's view, but it should not be ignored as sentiment could drive demand. About 55% of the 3,000 people surveyed said it was neither a good nor a bad time to buy, and house price expectations also lost momentum, with a net 44% expecting prices to rise, down from 51% last quarter. So moving on through this article, and it is a bit of a mixed bag, the next topic is the best home loan to fix. Home loan interest rates have risen from historic lows of about 2% to more than 8% in some cases. But rates dropping again is a story for next year. The Reserve Bank made it clear that it did not expect the OCR to fall anytime soon. So for those taking out a new loan or refixing an existing one, 12 months seems to hit the right spot, a bunch of mortgage advisors recently told Radio New Zealand. Squirrel Chief Executive David Cunningham said fixing short on a term of 18 months or less made sense based on the likely track of the official cash rate. In other words, it's going to be lower than where it is now at that time, all things going well. The Reserve Bank is holding rates up with the OCR and inflation track in the latest MPS. My view is that once inflation is snuffed out, home loan rates will likely fall over the course of 2025 and 2026 towards 5%. Edge Mortgage's financial advisor Glenn McLeod said his preference was firmly in the 12-month rate. He said 12-month fixes would be at a rate between 6.85 and 6.99% when discounted. And always go for those discounts or consider using a mortgage broker who can negotiate for you. That's my comments there. And while it is more expensive than 18 to 24-month lending, it does bring greater flexibility. Taking the longer-term interest rates may result in your rates being higher for longer than they need to be. So another sort of news here, same article, but just different topic, about what's been in the news. A real estate sector on the struggle to find buyers. It says more real estate agents are quitting the housing market as the job gets tougher. It's a buyer's market. We are having more problems finding buyers, one agent said. The number of active real estate licenses, including agents, branch managers and salespeople, is now 15,460, down from 16,053 in April 2023. So that's close to 600 people have left the industry. They don't tend to get reported like you would with redundancies and job layoffs because they're all independent contractors, but 600 people out of any industry is a pretty big hit. In late 2020, at the busiest time of the market, more than 10,000 houses changed hands in a single month. That number was 5,559 in April 2024, or about one sale for every three licensed industry participants. So there's not a lot going around. So at the same time, the Real Estate Authority, REA, said licensed real estate branch managers had grown by 21.6% in the past year. So people wanting to open branches, so that's something that's positive, I guess. We wanted to see strong growth in the number of supervisors in the profession, according to REA Chief Executive Belinda Moffat, and to support high standards of conduct. So through supervision, branch managers are able to support salespeople to identify and resolve issues and to avoid problems occurring in a transaction. And this can be particularly important in a challenging real estate market where transactions can be complex. So real estate salespeople are having it tough at the moment, and we've noticed here in Manawatu for some time, of course, number of properties selling is way down. There's quite a lot on the market, though, in my opinion. It's the best time to buy that it has been for a number of years. Again, the supply versus demand is being regulated through some of those handbrakes and brakes that I mentioned earlier, so that removing a number of buyers from the market means that it's harder to sell, which means that prices reduce. I was mentioning to someone I was having a meeting with earlier today that Palmerston North, I believe, has gone down about 1.6% in the last 12 months. It's not much compared to what it has been, and we are well poised to move up again if any of those handbrakes are removed. So renters versus landlords has been in the news, of course. Property investors say there is no excuse for poor insulation or ventilation under the new Healthy Home Standard, but some renters say it's too hard to challenge landlords. Renters are reporting they're still living in cold and mouldy houses despite being Healthy Homes compliant. But Property Investors Federation President Sue Harrison said tenants could go to Tenancy Tribunal. However, Renters United said Tenancy Tribunal was not set up in a way that was easy for renters to use, and the government has been told it needs to do more to help people struggling to pay for housing. The weekly accommodation supplement hasn't been increased in 6 years, and Trade Me last month reported rents had reached a record high. A budget advisor says that these payments, the weekly accommodation supplement, should be linked to rent prices. I would tend to agree with that. Building consents down. Another 1.9% drop in residential building consents in April over March points to a continued downturn in the construction sector over the rest of the year. A report by Westpac economists indicates that the 23% drop on the year earlier reflects the tough conditions in the building sector, with large increases in build costs and financing costs over the past few years, as well as a weakness in the housing market. Despite the rising costs, the price for newly built homes is under pressure. A number of consents fell in a number of the main centres. So that was a really great roundup of some of the stuff that's been happening in the last week by Kimberly Gomez from Radio New Zealand. So I've got a bit of a bad landlord, bad tenant type story here. And this incredible headline from the press, written by Sinead Gill, says tenant who grew cannabis in flat wins $10,000 from the landlord. Tenant who grew cannabis in flat won $10,000 from a landlord. Why? Well, a Christchurch renter was caught growing cannabis in his flat. He's awarded more than $10,000 by a landlord who broke the law. So be careful, landlords. Be careful. Tenancy Tribunal adjudicator Ross Armstrong, who considered the case in February and March this year, said although the tenant had been convicted and clearly broken the law, it didn't excuse the landlord from breaking the law himself. Russell Byfield unlawfully kicked his tenant Paul Barlow out of his Hillsborough rental in late February 2022, according to the public tribunal order. Byfield changed the locks and withheld Barlow's items for several months and produced contradictory and questionable evidence, including an invoice that didn't seem genuine, which Armstrong said didn't make him a credible witness. Landlords are expected to respect the rights of their tenants, but in this case, the landlord has decided to put their own interests first, Armstrong said. Effectively, evicting a tenant on the spot is just something you cannot do, and withholding belongings is absolutely a no-no. So the adjudicator said he wasn't sure how much he could trust witnesses on Byfield's side. A former flatmate of Barlow's had challenged Byfield's honesty over text, saying he couldn't lie straight in a bed. However, during the tribunal hearing, the flatmate switched allegiances. It seems that she, the former flatmate, was content to run with the hare and hunt with the hounds, the adjudicator said. As part of his counterclaim, Byfield referenced the fact Barlow had at one point illegally grown cannabis on the property. Armstrong agreed this was unlawful, however said Byfield produced no evidence this was something he had a problem with. At one point during the four-day hearing, Byfield admitted to knowing about the cannabis being grown on site prior to the police raid. The adjudicator said this was a contradiction in what Byfield said earlier in the hearing. The landlord stood his ground, but tribunal records proved he changed his story. According to the public order, Barlow and Byfield were on good terms before the tenancy began in 2019. At one point, there was a police raid and cannabis plants were found on the property. In 2021, Barlow was sentenced to 6 months home detention in the very flat he'd broken the law in. It appears there weren't any issues until February 2022. At the start of the month, Barlow's child was born. He'd begun to spend more time at the mother's house and agreed to let a woman, who told him she needed an urgent place to live, move into his flat. There was fallout between that woman and Barlow, resulting in the two issuing trespassing notices on each other. For reasons unclear, the landlord sided with the woman. On February 21st, Byfield unlawfully evicted Barlow on the spot and allowed the woman to stay in the rental. Gee, it's like the Wild West. It's like they're just doing whatever they want to, both parties. He put Barlow's items in storage and refused to let Barlow access it until he'd paid for the storage costs. He also tried to claim for costs associated with unfinished work on the property, unpaid rent, including for after the illegal eviction date, and for unlawful subletting. Byfield also supplied an invoice from contractors, but as there was no GST number, the adjudicator questioned if it was a real business. He also thought the amount the work cost was very conveniently amounted to roughly how much unpaid rent Byfield was claiming for. None of Byfield's claims were proven, though Barlow agreed to pay for the partial week of rent leading up to the eviction date, and the adjudicator pointed out that Barlow had been kicked out so didn't have the chance to remedy any issues. Byfield, the landlord, was ordered to pay his tenant $10,335. It included $4,050 for lost or damaged goods, $3,000 for disruption and harassment, that's taking away a tenant's home disrupts the quiet enjoyment of the home in the most fundamental way possible, the adjudicator said, and $2,000 for seizing the goods. So landlords, there are massive fines. You might be doing what you think might be the best way to solve a problem, but definitely worth getting getting some advice there. A lot of the stories that we bring on this podcast around bad tenants or bad landlords are often privately managed properties or self-managed properties where landlords just do not know the rules and what they can and can't do. And it's just so risky now with the size of the fines. Then it's a tricky one indeed, particularly if you're doing things yourself and you don't have that expertise. I know for my properties, I have a property manager look after them. It is somebody within my own firm, but it does provide me with that degree of separation, which is a wonderful thing to have in place. We're just going to move on here to the countries in this article from Stuff, Hamish McNeely. Country's first social housing in a heritage building is launched. So this will be really interesting to see how this goes. So it's believed to be a New Zealand first. It's the first social housing development in a heritage building. It's got pictures here and stuff, and this is from June 5th, 2024, if you're looking for it. The Lone and Mercantile building, which previously housed everything from wool to go-karting looms, has been given a new lease of life. And what is believed to be a New Zealand first, the building is the first social housing development in a heritage building. So the building, which looms large over Dunedin's waterfront area, will include 30 apartments for low-income tenants on behalf of the Salvation Army. Great stuff. The building was developed by Dunedin property developer Russell Lund of Lund Dunedin and his wife Suzanne Lund, Suzanne Lund Community Loft Apartments, honour his wife. The property was the first plaque unveiled by the Housing Minister Chris Bishop, who said he's looking forward to unveiling more over the coming years. We will see more developments like this, he said. Bishop told the dozens of guests, including Dunedin Mayor MP Rachel Brooking, city councillors, Salvation Army staff, contractors and new residents, that the country faced with issues with its current housing stock. It costs too much to buy a house in New Zealand. It costs too much to rent a home in New Zealand. It is a massive driver of inequality, poverty, hopelessness and despair amongst many in our communities. It's actually got pictures in this article too of the social housing. It looks really good. Looks cool. Yeah. The country had 24,000 families living on housing wait lists across the country and around 2,500 families living in emergency housing. Bishop said he'd met a family who have had two children while living in emergency accommodation, and really that's no future, he said. There was no silver bullet to solve the housing crisis, including making more land available, building higher density homes and reducing the cost of building materials. They all help, but yeah, the scale of the problem is so massive, it's hard to know how they'll be able to tackle it apart from just a long-term approach. Bishop said the community housing sector, such as Salvation Army, had an important part to play in addressing the housing crisis. Many of the country's social and economic problems come back to housing, he said. Those who moved into social housing often came from a point in their life of great vulnerability, and that housing provided the opportunity for a restart. Being able to wake up in a warm and dry home was a game changer, he said. New Zealand Loan and Mercantile Agency Co. Limited building was originally known as the Otago Wool Stores and was built in 1872 for stock and station agents Driver Stewart and Co. Salvation Army Territorial Director, Social Housing and Property Greg Foster, was approached by Lund in 2020 over the possibility of building and leasing social housing units in the building. The project had the support of the Dunedin City Council as well as the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development, which had supplied a funding contract with the Salvation Army for an initial 15-year lease. The building has 28 one-bedroom units, one two-bedroom unit, one three-bedroom unit, as well as an office for a full-time housing support manager, community room, a courtyard with outside seating, a trampoline, a drying room and bike storage. In addition to the first floor being solely community housing, the second floor contains units that are available for private rental. So Lund paid tribute to his wife, who was a big part of the project and was suffering from ill health. The redevelopment also engaged the services of Australian architect Robert Morris Nunn, known for high-end apartments, who wanted those living in the apartments to love the property. And while the current thought on social housing was to make it warm and dry, we thought we'd go one better. Instead, those behind the project wanted the building to be transformational for those who lived there. So it really does look neat. It's a great example of what can be done. It will be really interesting to see where that goes and how that performs in future. I've often said on this show we desperately, desperately need more housing and accommodation at the social end of the market, and that would help the entire market with regards to rising rents slowing and house prices slowing due to supply and demand. I mean, we haven't been in a situation of where supply and demand have been even or in favour of tenants for a very long time. And that makes it hard for people. It's a little bit of a vicious cycle. We've talked about on today's show there's that inequality gap. That's definitely a thing. So that's all we've got time for this week. You've been listening to Greg Watson on Property Matters on MPR. That's Manawatu People's Radio, of course. Te reo, irirangi, o ngā tangata, o Manawatu. So you can find this wherever all good podcasts are found, although why not start at the MPR website, mpr.nz, and you'll find some shows and back issues there. If you were on podcasts, just Google Greg Watson and Property Matters, and you will be able to find the show and subscribe to that to get news like this every week. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.